I keep remembering that. 7 o'clock, straight up. All right, good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic. Little housekeeping, we will be recording and publishing only the audio portion of this meeting. You will be able to send chat messages to the meeting hosts only, and that'll be myself, BJ, and questions, which is also known as Larry, who's kind enough to help us out. Let's see. So Ask It Basket questions should go to the user questions. When the time comes, I'm going to basically paste a link into three different service entities. I'll go ahead and paste that now so you can think about it. We're not taking direct contributions at Simple Actions during the quarantine. We are encouraging people to, as they see fit, to send donations to the Tidewater Intergroup, AA.org, and the Virginia area, AAVirginia.org, Area 71. So just think about that and handle yourself as you see fit. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. If you'd like your number passed along to, if you need numbers, just send a chat to the host. We'll get you set up with men, women with women. Any hands want to be recognized? We already welcomed John. Anybody else? All right. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting tonight is an open speaker ask it basket. Tonight we are very excited to welcome Ralph W. From Los Angeles, California. I'm going to unmute everybody so they can say welcome.
Welcome.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for being here.
Well, the
ask
you. It's supposedly got speakers from all over the world coming, but
welcome. All right. So I'm going to hand it over to Ralph here in just a second. Be thinking about questions you might like to ask. I am just delighted and excited to introduce Ralph to everybody. He's one of the men that I listen to his tapes, and he's appeared at the Virginia Beach Oceanfront. I got to meet him last spring at Billy Hill's event, the Blue Ridge Speaker Group. Just a wonderful little conference, a day-long conference up there in the mountains. And you guys are in for a real treat. So I'm not going to take one more minute of his time and introduce Ralph.
Thank you, Dave. My name is Ralph White, and I'm an alcoholic. And let's just get right into this. I was saying beforehand, this is almost the end of a stretch of what sounds like it's kind of dawning to me. I've been listening to myself over and over and over and over and over since Thursday. And I'm getting sick of me, but I'm not sick of you guys. So I don't know what we're going to hear today, but let's just talk about it. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, grew up in the 60s, and I'm one of six boys. Had a single mom for a parent because my dad was an alcoholic, and he got put out when I was a kid, and my mom started raising us by herself. Remarkable lady. And she raised six boys, and I... My story is my story. And we're a storytelling society in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm glad about that, because the purpose of our stories is, you know, we get a lot of information at our meetings. And if you're new, and oh, before I go any further, John, welcome. I think you said you were in your eighth day. I don't know if you're a new newcomer or what I like to call a used newcomer, but at any rate, welcome back if that's the case. And I'm glad you're here. The reason we tell our stories in Alcoholics Anonymous is if you continue to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's lots of information that we get. But the real purpose of the meetings and the real power of Alcoholics Anonymous is not the acquisition of information, you know, and knowledge, even though we talk about that. People talk about knowledge is power, power is power. But the real power in Alcoholics Anonymous is transformation. The transformational stories of our members. And you can't appreciate the transformation from to where I am today if you don't know where I come from. It's really why we tell our stories. And the other reason we tell our stories is there are as many different portraits of alcoholic as there are alcoholics. You might be tempted to think if you go to meetings and listen to the stories that we are our circumstance, that we are our situation. That's the reason he's alcoholic. His daddy was. That's the reason he's alcoholic. Look, he came from a tough neighborhood. That's the reason he's alcoholic. Look at the abuse he suffered in. That's the reason. That's my story. You know, and every single one of us has one, and mine is a little bit brief version like this. I was, even though I come from what seemed like the mean streets of Watts, I was a nerd, and I was the smart guy, and I was a high achiever, and I wouldn't have changed where I grew up and the circumstances I grew up in for anything in the world. I was always a class president, a student body president, straight A student, teacher's pet, goals, dreams, ambitions. I had them, and I had big ones, and I had my sights set pretty high. So I'm growing up, and as a result of that, I didn't do a lot of stuff early. I know that's shocking in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm not one of the ones that was going behind the parents, drinking out of the glass. 16 years old before I touched anything. And I get a girlfriend at 16, first girlfriend. I'm scared of girls at that time. And my girl was in the black backseat of a car on a double date with an older partner of mine who was driving, and drank down a plastic cup of rum and Coke, and it went down and rushed back to the top of my brain, and drinking started for me. Now, a lot of you guys remember your first drink, and I've been to enough meetings, and I hear people describe it. Mystical, magical, transcendent. I'm drinking for the rest of my life. That's not how it happened for me. You know, it was just one of the things that is a rite of passage. You're a kid coming up, you're square, you don't want to be square. You know, you're getting ready to go off to college, because when I took that drink at 16, I didn't start drinking anymore. You know, I'm on the fast track for success. I didn't really start drinking in earnest till I went to college in 1971. And when I went off to school, I went to school not far from, you know, I've been in L.A. my whole life. And I went off to college at UCLA. And at UCLA, in addition to whatever your official major was, if you lived in the dorms, you had to major in drinking, smoking weed, and playing Big West. And those three I did, you know, the classes and the rest of that, I started experiencing some things I hadn't experienced before. I started experiencing some C's and withdrawing from class and being put on subject to, and I wasn't used to that, but I got used to it real fast because things started happening differently for me. Priorities started changing. When I was a kid, my goal was to be the first Black president of the United States. Meant it, said it. People encouraged me. You know, I was involved somewhat in politics. I had goals and dreams and ambitions. But check out. If you, the alcoholic of my type, and this is budding potential alcoholic, right? This is before I had even come close to the line. But somehow you got these dreams and goals. And around 1972, I remember one of my other goals became being able to roll a joint, one paper, one hand. Because my brother could do it and make it look like a cigarette. And I used to use that old red roller. I know this is that, but this is indicative of the way. I don't know how that kind of subtle change started. Like, first Black president of the United States, one paper, one hand, became the what? you know, and so the alcoholic life soon becomes the only normal one. And I start doing what it is that I'm doing. I'm drinking Yago, saying, you know, Yago, Spinata, Tyrolia, you know, Brass Monkey, Southern Cup, things you drinking that, and you couldn't have told me. Alcohol was going to have its way with me. By the time I stumbled up out of that school, you know, I started working and I started pursuing a career. In about 1978 or nine, I started suffering some losses as a result of my drinking. And the cold thing about the disease I suffer from, you know what I don't like about the invisible line? It's invisible. It ain't nothing to say. If you take this next one, you enter in the region from which there's no return through human. Matter of fact, by the time you across the line, you way over here. Like, who put that line right here? You know, but the cold thing about the disease I suffer from is this. By the time I realize I have a problem and need to stop, it's already too late for me to stop. Cold thing about the disease I suffer from. Then. So things started happening that in retrospect I saw them, but when it was coming at me, I didn't. So when I lost that first job in 1979 as a result of drinking and using, I didn't attribute it to my alcoholism. I attributed it to Thursday paydays. Why would you pay somebody on Thursday and expect to see them on Friday? That didn't even make sense to me. That's a setup. You know, and I was in about my third inventory before the honesty of that situation came. But so I'm drinking and I'm using and life is going. I got married in 1980. I had my first daughter in 1983. Meanwhile, things are starting to come apart. I'm rising in the workplace, but my alcoholism is also increasing. By about at the end of the 70s and into the early 80s, now I'm a daily drinker and I'm drinking and I'm smoking weed and I'm using cocaine. I'm drinking and using on a daily basis and it got ugly. You know, then Bill talked about unhappy scenes in the sumptuous apartment. And I had many unhappy scenes in my home too. And the unhappy scenes in my home, they resembled things like, not resembled, they were things like stepping into my house and a guy sitting in the house already waiting on me. And he's got a gun pointed at me talking about I want my money. The unhappy scenes in my crib, guys coming over to the house demanding money that I owed from my wife. The unhappy scenes in my house, rent not being paid, landlord showing up, me hiding in the back, wife having to make excuse after excuse after excuse. The unhappy scenes in my house, sitting on my back porch, two-year-old daughter coming outside, busting me, going up in her piggy bank, and I'm claiming I'm going to replace the change with dollar bills. Many unhappy scenes in my home. We saved up. I can remember this one particular, I call it the ATM incident. We had saved up about $10,000 to buy our first home. And we had a separate account for it. Ready, ATMs had just come out. We used to call them the ready teller in the world. And my wife made the fatal mistake one night. I was going to the store to pick up something, and I guess we were light on cash or something, and we were going, she made the mistake of giving me the bank card to this particular account and did something extremely foolish. She gave that PIN number to her husband. Her husband happens to suffer from that thing. And I don't want to be that guy. And when you hit the $10,000 account and it goes down to $9,600, no big deal. And then it's at $82, okay. Then it's at $45, okay. And one day it's at $80 in about a month and a half. And you're getting ready to go to work because by now my wife was a professional and I was a professional, but we were down to one car. Because when you live in life the way that I'm living, that's what happens. One car is sitting. And we'd have to travel an hour to my job. She'd drop me off and she'd go to hers. And I remember this particular morning, we were getting ready to go to work and the bank account was really low. And she asked me a question. She said, Ralph, have you been going to the bank? No, I haven't been in the bank. And she said, well, I got a call from the bank yesterday. And they said, and she hadn't told me she had been monitoring and it got apprised of the situation, the shrinking bank account. And she said, the manager called me and said they have pictures of the person who's been going to the ATM. And he wants me to come in this afternoon and see if I can identify him. Now I knew, based on all those things I had told you guys by this time, we were on thin ice. And I knew if I let my wife go in there and get ambushed with those pictures, she called the police. She told the police, go get him. So she says this to me. I'm sitting on the bed getting ready to go to work. I remember saying, I took the money. What? I took the money. Fellas, you know that had to be the longest trip to work. I can't remember what was not said. I can't remember the time. I cannot remember. I'm just glad I still have my limbs. You know, that's just a snapshot of the way I was living. Eventually, I got put out of my house in about 1984, 85. And my brothers all ended up at my mom's house with me. All of us got put out of their respective homes. We all ended up at my mom's house. And back in about 84 to 85, we almost killed my mom, 85 to 86. She used to come home from work every single day with a bag of groceries, because if she kept food in the refrigerator, these six grown leeches that she gave birth to would have been making plates and taking them out to people in the neighborhood so we could get what it is that we needed to get. And I'm so glad God don't make misery comfortable. And on October the 10th of 1986, right from where I'm sitting, that house I told you that we all ended up in back in 1985, my mom's house, I'm sitting there right now. I'm sitting at the scene of the crime, the last crime scene. And in about October the 10th of 1986, I was up the street about a block and some things happened. And I ended up owing a young guy that was a dangerous guy some money at the end of that night. And I was two blocks away and I snuck back here that Saturday morning. It was set off October the 11th. And I came in and I knocked on the back door and I told my mom, if you let me in, I promise I'll go into treatment and get some help. I'll go in with Ronnie. My brother Ron was in, he was already in a treatment facility. He had been there since July. And to seal the deal, I said, let me call Ronnie on the phone. I have the number to the Harbor Life Center. And I got my brother on the phone. And I'm saying, Ronnie, tell mom that you got a bed for me. He's excited on the other line. You want to get a bed? We'll get you a bed. We'll get you a bed. What seemed to be a flimsy reed on that line, you know, on that line, here's the miracle. That Monday, I actually stayed in the house that whole weekend. And that Monday, I went down to the Harbor Life Center. And life started for me. You know, I still get chills in my story and when I listen to you guys. There's a rhythm to listening to speakers in Alcoholics Anonymous. I still fall in love with, I fall in love with Alcoholics Anonymous all over again when I listen to you guys share. That's why I really appreciate when you share your stories. It's cool. I'm a head guy. I like the people to come in and take us instructionally through the steps and the rest. That's okay. Every now and then, occasionally, though, the head speakers, it kind of sound like finger in your face. Get your finger out of my face. I'm not that guy. You know, but when you tell your story, there's a rhythm. And there's a place that we get to in that song you sing. And all of us have a song. And for, you know, for the front end is different for everybody. Some people's song at the front end is sad, sad, sad. Some people is rock and roll and it's, ooh, you know, it's fun and games and the rest of it. But all of us hit a point in our song where we say, the thrill is gone. And we sing the blues for a long time. And then we get to the part I like. I call it the sweet spot in your stories. What happened? And I still love it. I still love it when I remember what happened when I ran into you. I'd love to hear somebody say, and then I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Some people went, they were druggy and kicking and screaming. Some people didn't hear the music at their first meeting. I heard the music immediately. Something about you guys, you my people. It's something about hearing God and shit in the same sentence that works for me. You know, I'm not a thee and thou guy. Grew up in Baptist church. My mom is still, but I'm this guy. I like it like this. And so I started going to meetings of alcoholics. They brought a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous into the facility my first weekend. and a speaker was standing in front of the group, and he was sharing somewhat like I've been sharing with you guys today. And I remember in 1986, in October, I was in a real bad way, and I was in a real dark place. I was full of remorse, and I was full of regret, and I was full of, I'll never be able to forgive myself for the things I had done and what I had become. And that speaker that night shared some things. He shared about taking from the job and taking from the family. And I remember looking at him and thinking to myself, yeah, you sharing about doing scandalous things, but you look scandalous. You should have been doing that. I'm different. Y'all ain't gonna hear my business. Speaker seemed like he knew I was in the room. He dropped something on me like this. He said, if you're sitting in this room right now, you are not responsible for your disease, but you are responsible for your recovery. And you have just now tapped into a source of power much greater than yourself. And you don't have to drink and you don't have to use no matter what, provided you are willing to fulfill some conditions. That speaker that night caught my attention. He went on to say, this is the only club you can be a member of where the worse off you are when you get here, better off your chances of staying. And I got the message of hope from the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that they brought into the facility. He proceeded to describe this physical allergy that I suffer from, that is something physically different about me that don't take place in other people. He said something like, when I drink, I get thirsty. And that made sense to me. And he said something else. He said, but that ain't the main problem. If that was the main problem, I'd just say no. I've been in programs before. I'd just say no. But it's something about when I'm not drinking. It's something about what happens to a guy like me when I'm not. The book, Dr. Silkworth, describes it as restless, irritable, and discontent. And he talks about this obsession of the mind. There's something that happens to a guy like me that keeps me going back, because this sensation I discovered in getting low, I can't find it nowhere else. I don't find it in shopping. I don't find it in making money. I don't find it in having sex. I don't find it. That sensation is so elusive. I don't find it anywhere else. Guys like us. And unless I can replicate that, he talked about, unless I can experience what he called an entire psychic change, you know, a change in the way that I see and do and react and respond to the thing to my life, a change in attitude, a change in beliefs, a change in all that. Unless I can do that, there's little chance of my recovery. I don't know whether or not I wanted a lot of chance of my recovery, but I did know that I just wanted to get the gorilla off me. I did not come up in here walking toward the light. I came up in here running toward from the fire. You know, I just wanted to get it off me. Didn't know what was waiting on me in recovery, but I knew what was waiting on me in the life. And I was 33 years old, and I was tired of losing. I had a 2.5-year-old daughter. I was tired of being a next year daddy. I was tired on birthdays and tired on Christmas, looking at my watch, or in my case, looking at the sun and saying to my next self, next year, I'm going to get that girl something. Next year, I'm going to get her something. And when I was in the harbor, like, I don't know why that story is coming up. I was in the Harbor Light October 1986. And in December, I had some money on the books they had been keeping. I was getting disability, didn't know it, and they had been banking my money for me. And so I had a little bit of money at the treatment facility. And I remember that December in 86, I took $60 that I had saved up. And I went to downtown Los Angeles to some little swap meet type store. And I bought my little girl, she was 2.5. And I bought her a pink jacket with a gray fur collar. Looking back in my memory now, I know it was probably a little cheap something, because I'm an extravagant guy. I'm an over-the-top guy. But at that time, that little $40 jacket, it looked like a mink stole. It felt like daddy was coming back. My friend Howard Pete, before he died, he said it, wherever you see God, you sit in the window and you mark that spot. You mark that spot. That was one of my early markers. John, I don't know if you feel like me with your 8 days right now. I don't know if it feels hopeless that I'll ever be welcome back in the house. I don't know if it feels hopeless that I'll ever be daddy again. I don't know if it feels hopeless that I'll never be welcome at the family reunion. I don't know if it feels hopeless that maybe I'll never have a key to any place else. I'll never walk with my head up again. I wonder where I put my self-respect and where I left it and if I can ever go back and get it. But I want to let you know, I got all in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an all-in guy in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are some very good reasons why I'm an all-in guy, and I want to share them with you, because I want you to have your own moments. There's a lot of people on the Zoom meetings now that they'll verify it. I call them those grace come call them moments. And we've come to expect them now. People like us. People like us. We got a broad third tradition, John. That third tradition is the only requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous is a desire to stop drinking. The moment I express a desire, I'm on the team. Can't nobody put you off. You ain't got to try out. You ain't got to audition. In fact, tryout's over. You made it. The minute I say I have a desire, I'm on the team. That's a wonderful thing. Most of us would agree that broad umbrella is one of the most powerful facets of Alcoholics Anonymous. You in. But check this out. Everybody that's on the team ain't in the game. Put me in the game. Put me in the goddamn game. I'm not a spectating guy. I'm not a sideline guy. I'm not a guy that sits around and waits around. I never saw you sitting up drinking and thought I was going to end up with a buzz. I don't see you taking steps and think I'm going to end up recovered. I better do it for myself. Put me in the game. Well, what the hell are you talking about? Put me in the game. You know, and I was about a year and a half sober, and I got on my knees with a group of men and women. And I said, God, I offer myself to you. I'm voluntarily telling, I'm walking away. I'm going to stop. I'm going to get out the business. I'm, you know, the book says when we get ready for that third step, it talks about what do we mean by that and what do? We have to quit playing God. Why? It don't work. Not there should not have any God. No, it don't work. Dude, it ain't working. Forget all the rest of that. We have to quit. So don't be worrying about when you get to your third step. What's God's will for me? That ain't what I'm looking for in the third step. The third step is just I'm getting out the God suit. I'm retiring from running my own life. I'm giving it to something else, and I'm giving it to you because I've been making a mess of it. God, do something with your boy, just like I am. You ain't got to come right to get right in Alcoholics Anonymous, just like I am. I turned myself in, and I got all in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I put all my chips on the table. And I said, do something with me. And he said that deal, you know, relieve me of this whole rest of the deal. So this idea, you know, because I suffer from an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer, but I don't know what a spiritual experience look like, but I think I do. That's why it's so hard for me to get in touch with that. The whole deal, you know, you ain't got to go no like long quest to find the power and the rest. I'm going to give you the shortcut. You want to find God? Grow God, shrink Ralph, whole deal. Whole deal. Grow God, shrink Ralph. The book, as I disclose myself to him, he'll reveal himself to me. It's too much me in front of him. God ain't high. He ain't nowhere. You know, on October the 11th of 1986, I hadn't been to a meeting. I didn't have a sponsor. I hadn't written a fourth step. I hadn't shared a fifth step. I didn't have a sponsee. I hadn't gone to any conferences. I hadn't done any H&I work. I hadn't done any of the stuff but something happened October the 11th of 1986. And for everybody in you who had a how dark it is before the dawn moment, something happened before the meeting, before the sponsor, before the inventory, before the amends, before any, something happened. What is it? And most of our members will call that, they describe it as, they can describe nothing but grace. Nothing but grace. Here's the deal. We don't create the grace. We don't summon the grace. We can't predict the grace. We don't control the grace. It's available and we access it. We access the grace. And after I get up off my knees, my job from that moment to this moment, 33 plus years later, we don't create the grace. We wipe the window. Because we blocked. We wipe the window. We clear the channel. We do 4 and 5, we wipe the window and we smudge the window and we do 8 and 9 and a lot. And all of a sudden the sunlight's coming and we're walking on the sunny side of the street. Put me in the goddamn game. As a result of being in the game, you know, I got a daughter whose piggy bank I was going in. She's 36. She's a practicing attorney in the state of California. When she walked down the aisle 7 years ago, she was accompanied not by stepdaddy, not by play daddy, her daddy. Put me in the game. She's given me 2 biological grandsons, and I got 3 other grandsons. My granddaddy was my guy. He was my guy. I didn't have a dad. But when I was a kid, I didn't respect that he was my guy. I respected him, but now I ain't gonna be square like granddaddy with my grandmother 56 years. You know, he's the guy that could always, he's a stand-up guy. I wanna have a reputation for that, but I don't wanna do stand-up things. I don't wanna be that, but my guy. And I tell you something, I got on my knees about 33 years ago, about 32 years ago, I got on my knees. And I offer myself to this power. And when my grandsons look at me, they look at their granddad the way I looked at my wife. Put me in the game. Put me in the game. I don't have scientific evidence for this next statement. 1985, my mom had a nervous breakdown. These six boys she gave birth to damn near killed her. That's way back in 1985. Almost lost her. In 1986, we started coming to you. February 2nd of this year, we gave my mom a 90th birthday party. I did not know when I walked into Grace back in 1986, I was getting an assignment. Just to the extent that we do it is, I didn't know. I was walking into an assignment. I didn't know that in 2020, our planet was facing something we had never faced. I didn't know my 90-year-old mom wouldn't have to be by herself. I didn't know I was getting ready for this. It's me and her. I don't have enough time to tell you all the things that have happened in my recovery. Some of the things that seemed like they were so bleak, some of the low points, marriage breaking up in 2010, lost all my money, lost my home, was out somewhere, ended up through a series of things back with me and my mind. Put me in the game. You know, I'm an all-in guy. I'm a guy that loves the fact that I see silver linings. I wouldn't even know. Look at what we get to do. Look at what we get to do. There, everybody is in the same situation right now, but we're the blessed ones. A lot of people, all they get to do is binge watch. I like binge watching. If you haven't seen Ozark, see Ozark, you know, I like binge watching a bunch of stuff. I've done that. But imagine we get to go to nonstop meetings. We get to go to meetings anywhere in the world. We have each other. John, anybody else that's new on this Zoom platform right now, I want to let you know what you're walking into. You're walking into a brand new way of life, and you just got a brand new family. First name, your name, last name, alcoholic. You'll never walk alone again one day at a time unless you choose to. And I am so grateful that you guys have put up with me for these last almost 34 years. My name is Ralph White, and I am an alcoholic.
Oh, thank you, Ralph. I'm going to unmute everybody.
Thank you, Ralph. That was great.
Thank you, Ralph. That was amazing.
Thank you, Ralph.
All right, I'm gonna mute everybody back. And let's see. So let's give Ralph a break for a couple of minutes, and we'll do some we'll do some announcements and Seven Tradition and things like that. And I hope that you've been submitting questions for Ralph. And we'll reconvene in just a few minutes and start asking those. So chat any questions that you would like answered to the user questions. I'm going to read the Seven Tradition self-support card. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. So we'll also notice on the right-hand side or in the chat window, you'll have links to TidewaterInnerGroup.org, AA.org, and the Virginia area, AAVirginia.org. Please consider dropping a few dollars in there. A word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. I will take a couple of announcements. Anybody? All righty. I'll look back for hands in a second. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. Or if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. I'm going to paste that over there. All right, so we got time for questions. I'm going to get back in here and unmute our dear Ralph. Nope, Ralph's unmuted. Attaboy. Larry, it doesn't look like we have any questions, so I'm just going to ask a couple of you.
Hey, I stopped. I gave an abbreviated version. I like questions. I could have kept talking.
Well, we did have an hour and a half available for the meeting, but it's all good. Let's get some questions in there. Ralph, you want to talk about amends a little bit? I was wondering. A lot of people ask if you ever have an amend go poorly, or maybe you thought it went poorly and it turned out to be just the right thing. Any thoughts on making amends you'd like to mention?
Wow, it's funny you say that. In 1987, we started, me and my brother and a friend of mine got together with a group of 12 right here in this house at this dining room table. And we started going through the Big Book together. And we went through it. It took us about almost a year to just go through the first seven chapters. We did all the steps together as a group, and some people heard about it. So we'd like to do that, and we invited them, and we did it again. And we do that, and we go through the 12 steps, and then we stop and we open up. And we've been doing that since November of 87. And this morning we had that meeting, the Never Too Early Big Book Workshop, and we're up to about 200 and some odd people, about 250. In the Zoom meeting this morning, we had about 200 some people, and we're in the ninth step. So we had a lot of discussion just this morning about the ninth step. And the thing about the ninth step, you know, there are some parts in the ninth step. We can talk about that process, you know, especially since we got some time, since y'all acting shy up in here. I'm gonna take some time and we'll talk about it. Because I could have kept going, you know. And the ninth step, you know, that's the step that separates the men from the boys if you really want to taste the freedom. So some people in here, I'm going to take a minute since you're not raising your hands. Some people, I know a lot of people in here have done four steps and have done fourth and fifth. And for a lot of people, you might find some people to continue to show up on my foot. Why does this person keep showing up? Why does he keep showing up? Why does he keep showing up? And when that happens, it's probably not a fourth step issue. It's probably a ninth step. A lot of people wonder, why am I not getting freedom after I do a fifth step? Because it's not a five-step program. It's a 12-step program. And the biggest freedom in the place in the book, the 12 and 12 talks about when you really want to see the step that separates me from it's nine. It's nine. It's the ninth step. And the thing about the ninth step is when I go into a thinking, so David's question is, what if one goes sideways? What if one doesn't go the way that I think it should go? Well, when I look at the reason why I'm doing a ninth step, it's no way it can go sideways. Reminding ourselves. You know, when you go into that step, there are a couple of places, because remember in chapter 5, we said some of these we balk, that's a balk step. And Bill knows about balk steps. So whenever it's a balk step, there's going to be parts in there. At the front end of the ninth step, it says, reminding ourselves that we agreed to go to any length for victory over alcohol. And then later on, it says, remember, you know, remind ourselves and remember that we had agreed to go to any length for a spiritual experience. Same thing, reminding ourselves we agreed to go to any length for victory, reminding ourselves we were going, and that's the deal. The deal is not to be cool with whoever I'm making them amends with, not to get cool. That's a side benefit, and that's a side effect. But no matter what happens in the amends, remember, my real purpose in doing this is to fit myself to be a maximum service to God and the people about me. And that fitting myself to be a maximum service takes a lot of different forms. And I think I bring to the table preconceived ideas of how it's supposed to look. I think if I'm making amends to Dave, I go to him, I want to repair the relationship, I'm supposed to leave with a repair relationship. Well, what I'm supposed to leave with probably make it clear to me later on. I know the things I'm always going to leave, hopefully, with my side of the street clean. I'm going to leave with being fit. I'm going to leave with a pathway to the, I'm going to leave further down this path to a spiritual experience. This morning we talked about amends where people are willing to face jail. And we had three of our members share about that. One guy, you know, was in there making amends for being a perpetual parole violator. In the sense that he wouldn't show up. He wouldn't show up for his test. He wouldn't show up to his PO. And so he, this time, now that he's sober, he went to make amends to his parole officer and to his parole officer as a stand-in for all the other ones. And he's making the amends and he's doing the deal and he's telling him he's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and he's telling him what he's been doing for these 2.5 years that he was at that time. And he says, as he's sharing it, the PO is nodding, like David is doing now, and it's, you're right on and the rest of that. And as he's sharing, somebody came in from the back and they walked him out and violated him for parole violation. We're pleased with what it is that you're doing and we're happy that you're doing it, but we walked him and he went to county jail. First time he went to county jail, sober. He had been to county jail numerous times drinking, but never sober. Went to county jail, was in there 48 hours. Showed up at the hearing. Entire home group showed up at his hearing for him. Home group showed up. People had letters. People had it. They released him what he called forthwith. Didn't make him go back to jail and get his stuff. Didn't make him do anything. Released him on the spot. And he walked out of there free person. But more than a free person, more than the circumstance, what he walked out of there with was a walk with his hand in the hand of his power. He walked out with a transformational experience. He walked out with a whole different attitude. He walked out with a whole different way of living. He walked out with a taste of freedom. We had a second person, same deal. And he was standing in front of the court. And my brother, who's a public defender, went Ronnie, his, and he's one of us. And he's broken his anonymity on several occasions with members. And this guy has come in there with letters from members, come in there with glowing recommendations from the job he currently had. And he was looking at doing terror. And the judge said, sir, what you're doing is commendable. We are very happy about it. 16 months. Ronnie went in lockup with him. And the guy says to Ronnie, my brother's Ron, his attorney, what part of the game is this? You told me it was going to be all right. Ooh, but we don't know what all right looks like, right? Showed up at a meeting at the home group 3 months later. Saw my brother out. When I went inside, every person inside that was locked up with me told me this was a hanging judge. Told me this judge usually gives high term for those kinds of things, 5 years. He only gave me 16 months. I got credit for time served already. Was out in 3 months. Nothing on him, nothing following him. Had a new experience. Came when Ronnie had last seen him, he was scared. He was angry. He was resentful. You lied to me. What part of the game? When he came out, see, we look at the page. God's writing the chapter. Don't trip off what page you're on. So what you do when you go in amends. Don't worry about that. It's not what I'm going for. You know, just think. whenever you're in a situation that looks like it's not going the way that I think it should go, remember the third step, the promises. We became less interested in our little plans and desires. I don't like the way they call my plans in little. Why are you calling my little? But we became less interested in my little plans and desires, you know, because I think I know what's okay for me and I don't. What's the best barometer for that for us? Just think. We wouldn't be here if not for a botched plan. When Bill Wilson traveled to Akron, Ohio in May of 1935, he went down there on a business opportunity. And if that business opportunity had come off all right for him, he would have been set. And he needed to be set. And his business did not come out the way he planned. He went down there on a proxy fight and they lost. And he was discouraged, standing in a hotel lobby the day before Mother's Day in 1935. And I know he was thinking, he was 6 months sober, had been looking for drunks for 6 months. Nobody was getting sober. He was discouraged. And I know he was hurting. And I know he was probably thinking, if he's anything like me, part of the game is this. I got sober and this is what I get. First time I go out, get ready to make some money. This is, man, I need to get this up. And he got thirsty. He got thirsty in that lobby. And a thought came to him. I've been looking for drunks for 6 months trying to get them sober. But it dawned on him. The fruits of that labor that at that time seemed like it wasn't bearing fruit. He said, I need to find a drunk so I don't drink. He had been looking for drunks to stop them from drinking. And I need to find a drunk not to drink. And through a series of divine coincidences, he got put in touch with a lady who had a husband like us. And Bill Wilson met Dr. Bob Smith. And day after Mother's Day in 1935. And those two gentlemen met. And that 15 minutes turned into 5.5 hours. And they set about looking for people like me and you.
Bob's right. Plan. Thank you, Ralph. I didn't mean to cut you off if you weren't done. You sounded like you were done. Mark wants to know, did your brother get sober?
I have 4 brothers in recovery. Ronnie is a year younger than me. He's 3 months older than me in recovery. Ronnie's birthday is July of 1986. I got my brother Rod. Rod got sober on Christmas Day in 1987. It's a story in and of itself. And my brother Reggie is here right now. And Reggie got sober in 87, left us in 92, was wandering in the wilderness for years. And Reggie's been back now, coming on 3. And Reggie, of all of me and my brothers, is the most on fire right now. Probably the most active, probably the most, you know, the biggest and best example of this program right now. So it's 4 of us. The 4 that need to be here are here. Yeah, we have a sober house. That's what we do. And that's a great question, but yes.
Thank you. Bobby wants to know, can you share experience, possibly going a little deeper on step 6 and 7? Do you have anything?
6 and 7 are steps that people, the book says, in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, on 6 and 7, if you look at it in the big book, the 12 and 12 goes into more detail. But in the big book, you will say to yourself, it's only 2 paragraphs. Why is it only 2 paragraphs on step 6 and step 7? In the old Joe and Charlie workshops, they used to say, those are the pick and the shovel steps. You don't need instructions for a pick and a shovel. But this is what I believe. This is what I believe. It's 2 paragraphs in it, but I think the whole book is 6 and 7. I think the whole 164 pages. Our 12-step process, when you start doing it, it looks like a series of discrete steps, but it's a way of living. And if I incorporate it as a way of living, as it describes in the 12 and 12, it'll become a manner of living that will expel the obsession to drink and to suffer and make him usefully and hopefully whole. And when I look at 6 and 7, so Bill, when he writes these steps, he just breaks them down and manageable and digestible in a way for us to look at them and approach them in a systematic way. But once you start going through all 12 steps, when are you ever not doing 6 and 7? You know, the 6th step, you know, we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Which defects of character? The ones I discovered in 4 and 5. I get on my knees in the 3rd step and say, okay, God, do something with me. And in the 3rd step, it gives me my marching orders for the rest of this process. Relieve me, it doesn't say, of the desire to drink beverage alcohol. Relieve me, it doesn't say, of this insatiable thirst that I have. Relieve me, it doesn't say, of the bondage of drugs and alcohol. It says, relieve me. I call it the bait and switch moment in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know I was signing up for this program. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Whole deal. Bondage of self. We start going into that. Now, how do we do that? What do we mean by that, and what do we do? Well, then I start writing, and I look at the common manifestations of self that's got me in bondage. Resentments, fear, sex conduct. If I look at those 3 major areas, and as I look at those areas, I'll come out of the 5th step, and I share it with somebody because, you know, I don't grade my own paper. You know, that's why the book says a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. Don't grade your own papers. You know, when you sit down with a sponsor, with somebody who's done this, and you do a 5th step, coming out of that on the back end, I'll see some glaring aspects of me that have always been what holds me in bondage. Judgmental, overly critical, overly sensitive, you know, gossip, you know, controlling, you know, the big ones for me is the bondage of what I think you think about me, self-approve, all those things. So now I go into 6. Okay, God, you need to do something with them. When you hear the word defects, you know, 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. When you hear defects of character, when you think of the word defects in a commercial sense, what do you think about? When you think it's an automobile, when a model is defective, what happens? It gets recalled. Where? To the manufacturer. Why? Because the car don't work on itself. So I went on work on our defects of character. What happens? 6th step, recall to manufacturer. And it only happens when I get willing and surrendered enough by the results of me playing God, by the results of bondage itself, by the results of the things that I use that I think that I need to get what I want or to protect myself from defects of character. And those things are the things that I look at. All 164, when we talk about in the 4th step, selfishness and self-centeredness, that's in the 4th step. What are those but defects of character? When we talk about resentments, that's in the 4th. What is that but defects of character? When I look in my 4th column in the 4th step and I share it in the 5th, where is that? Defects of character. When I go into amends, when I'm sitting down in front of somebody, that's when I absolutely get the opportunity to see God work and remove them. I need to go to those people with a helpful and forgiving spirit. Where do I get that from? Where do I get? Because I'm unhelpful. I hold grudges. Defect of character. I'm vindictive. Defect of character. So those defects, God gets an opportunity to work them. The steps are not discrete. They integrate it. They work together. And you don't have to work. Just do the process. The process of 89 is the process. That's the beginning of freedom from 6 and 7. But 6 and 7 is more than a notion. And it's more than a conversation. And it's more than I'm going to assert my power of will. It's the, what does that sound like? It sounds like the 1st step. I'm going to assert my power of will over this drinking, and I'm going to get myself sober. How did that work for you? Same thing in defects of character. I run my mouth too much. I say the wrong thing at the wrong time. I can't get control of, you know, anybody that's here, everybody I'm looking at is grown. Who on this Zoom platform right now has problems or defects that are new? I guarantee you the same things have been plaguing me. Probably I pout when I don't get my way. That's cute when you're 3. You're 66. It ain't cute. Nobody's buying and nobody, but it's in my, it's hard. Why? Okay, God, you got to do something with that. And here's the deal about defects of character, whoever asked that question. Here's the beauty of 6 and 7. What entity do we know of that's not defective, that doesn't have a defect? Most of us would agree that's God. To be human is to be defective. That's why in 7, I said, my creator, I would have you take all of me, good and bad. If you're in a relationship with somebody right now, if you got a girl or you got a guy, what's the greatest thing they can do? You might say, give me money. The greatest gift a person can give another person, especially an enemy, take me like I, knowing I know you. I know where you go left. I know where you go sideways. And I accept you anyway. That's huge. So when I go to this power, it's just like this, just like this. And he works with my defects. My sponsor, who's Bob Azans out of St. Paul, Minnesota, Bob says it's a design feature. He said it's like a lamp. A lamp is designed to be plugged into power. That's a design feature, ladies and gentlemen. We're designed to be plugged into the power. When we're unplugged, we bump into things. We're designed. The defects is what is the portal to the power. If Ralph White ever gets so holy that he does not need to go to God, that's what keeps me. That's what connects me. That's what grounds me. It's a design feature. Don't trip off. I'm never going to be free of it, but God will put the ones that are in me to good use. But I don't know which ones they are. That's why in the seventh step prayer it says, you know, I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character. Not that I don't like. Some of them I don't like. They make me look bad. I get shy and I get tongue-tied. That makes me look bad. Take that. No. The ones that stand in the way of my usefulness. That's a whole nother conversation, too. I know I went long, but you guys ain't asking questions and you gave me some time. So, you know.
No, it's all good, man. What about, Ralph, what about adversity and sobriety? I imagine in 33 years you've been through a thing or two, and specifically someone said was going through a divorce in sobriety. Well, they said difficult. I imagine it was difficult. How'd you do that?
Three major valleys. I've had three valleys in my recovery. And the thing about when you hit, how do you do it? Here's something in general. And one of the valleys was a spiritual valley, but it wasn't financial. Here's the deal too. A lot of people can experience success in AA. Don't let the life that AA gave you get in the way of your AA life. Don't let the life that AA gives you get in the way of your AA life. Don't get so much money, or don't get so in love, and don't get so enamored, and don't get so head turned that I put this to the side. Don't let the life that he gave you. But I've had a couple of things that happen. I'm not one whose story involves you don't have to drink even if you want to, because I don't know nothing about that. Anytime I've had an obsession, I've gotten loaded. I haven't had an obsession in over 33 years. God did that, took it out of my mouth. But I came close one time. 7 years sober. And this wasn't a low spot, but this story popped up, so I'm going to tell it. I was 7 years sober. I was working at a law firm. I was paralegal. And we had a big trial out of town in Palm Springs, 2 hours from L.A. So we moved. We had a war room set up in a hotel down there, moved our operations down there. Client was a big client, Walt Disney Company. We won the trial the first day on a motion. Shouldn't have been made long. So, but at any rate, we went in a hotel room celebrating. Seven people standing in a circle. Three people from the Walt Disney Company, they're, you know, one of their vice presidents, their senior counsel, they're paralegal. Four people from my law firm, two partners, an associate and me, paralegal, low person on the totem pole. And we're standing in a circle. And the counsel from Disney is pouring Dom Perignon, standing in a circle. And I didn't want to drink. I'm a big book guy. It gets popular to say, don't worry, don't rely on the slogans. I drink no matter what. Because I remember when I was new and I used to say, don't drink no matter what. I do drink no matter what. But now, as a result of some experiences, I know the value of some stuff. When I was standing in that circle and the Dom Perignon was going around, one thing was going, well,
a lot of stuff was going through my head. One thing was like flashing neon. I don't drink no matter what. I don't drink no matter what. I don't drink no matter what. It's not my program of recovery, but it's my anthem as a result of having a program of recovery. I don't drink no matter what. I don't drink no matter. But a lot of other, you know, parallel with my sound reasoning was these insanely trivial ideas that used to dominate me, which is, what are they going to think about you? Oh my God, you're going to embarrass your firm. You're going to embarrass yourself. What kind of shit? All they want you to do is sip. You're going to look stupid. You don't want to look, you don't want to look, you know, just all this stuff. And I cannot tell you which meeting I could have afforded to skip, which sponsees call I could have afforded to miss, which fifth step I could have afforded to not do. I can't tell you what it was that gave me just enough to step out of that circle and say, hold on, I'll be right back. And I went to the sink in that room and put water in my glass, and I got back in the circle, and I felt like everybody was looking at me, and we toasted. And I'm going to tell you something, if you knew. Doing the right thing does not always feel comfortable. That's not the measure of measuring whether it's right action. Because I always want to measure right action by how I feel. This ain't a feel better program, it's a get better program. When I get better, I feel better, but I'm short term. I felt really uncomfortable for 30 seconds. But that's been about 27 years ago. And I felt extremely comfortable these last 27 years with that decision. You know, so that's one thing. That's why I understand we talk about listed down the causes and conditions. I came close to drinking without the obsession to drink, but being dominated by that defect of character of what I think you think. You know, that's one. Now, 22 years sober, third valley, deepest valley I've been in recovery. I thought they needed a recovery home for old timers. I had lost my marriage. And me and Lisa have been together 20 years. I had lost my house in front of everybody. Took my house, went broke. I had gone into real estate, didn't have a deal for 3 years. Ended up sleeping on my boy's couch. I was going to Chicago. I was in Chicago on a layover, going to talk at one of these deals. And I was called my college roommate. I heard his father had died. And as I was talking to him on the phone, he was telling me how good his life was going. And every time he told me something, it felt like a knife in my stomach. What part of the game is this? I understood coming in ass out when I was brand new, but this is 22 years sober. How could you be that stupid? How could you lose your house? How could you lose your marriage in front of everybody? How could you be broke like this? 22 goddamn years sober. What part of the game is that? Share something with you. And if one of you had seen me in O'Hare Airport and it walked up to me and talked about this too shall pass, I would have socked you. I didn't want to hear that shit. I don't want to hear none of that AA cliche. I don't want to hear it. Couldn't feel God. Couldn't feel his presence. Couldn't pray. Didn't want to. Totally disconnected. It's like when you're in a cell phone zone with no reception. And there'll be some times there will be no grace reception. Too much self-pity, no grace reception. Too much anger, no grace reception. Three together, you're really in a dead zone of feet. And I called my boy. I have a sponsor and I have a lot of closed-mouth friends. And I trained my feet. I called somebody on the phone, which is what I do no matter what's going on. And I called my boy Stan and I started sharing. I'm crying. This is what happened. It'll happen for you too. Seemed like he three-wayed me. God got on the line. Whenever two or more of us get together, God will get in the conversation. That's why when you're sponsoring and you're working with a sponsee, you hear something come out your mouth that you didn't know you knew. When two or more of us get together, God gets on the line. I remember when I was going through that dark, 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 dark period, I learned some things. Lean in. Lean into Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned some other things. Is it all right now? Not next week. Not when this pain dissipates a little bit. Not when the money get right now. While we on this Zoom meeting right now. Don't worry about the bills next week or what's going to happen when the pandemic is over. Do I have a job? Right now. Right now. And every right now kept being all right. Kept being grace sufficient to meet the need. may not always exceed the need. And I always remind myself, God did not save me from the cesspool to let me drown in the bathtub. What makes me think that this same power, and the thing about having 22 years behind me, I had a long history of answer prayer already. You newcomers and youngsters talk about, you know, it ain't the quality of sobriety, it ain't the quantity of sobriety, it's the quality. I used to say that too. Of course I had to, because all I had was, I didn't have quantity. So I always downgrade what I don't have. And I'm not knocking that. There's some truth to that. But I'm telling you, you can't get experience except by having experience. So if you're in the dark place, that's where God will work with you. That's where you get your most value. That's where you get your most use. Four phases of my development, they meet the same phases of my prayer development. Phase one, help me. Help me. Almost all of us got in here on that prayer. Phase two, give me, grant me peace as I go from here. Grant me the serenity as I go from here. Phase three, change me. Do something with me, God, change. Phase four, use me. Highest phase, highest calling in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what he does. Somebody in here, you know, that's what he'll do. He uses me through my experience. Somebody in here is just getting experience. Get ready to be useful. Get ready to get, God's got an assignment with your name on. But you don't cut out on the deal and you lean in the Alcoholics Anonymous. And those are the things that I know. Is it all right now? And more than anything else, live in your life, not in your head. Am I living in my life or am I living in my head? In my life, I'm full. In my life, I'm not sleeping outside. In my life, I can find something to laugh. But in my head, it's a megadon. It's the last days. It's crumbling. It's crazy. I can't take this. Living my life, not in my head.
Thank you. Debbie wants to know, what are road dogs and why do I need them?
Because for me, if this thing wasn't fun, you'd have a different person standing up here speaking. You know, at 33 years old, see, I've always been a communal guy. I've always been a fun guy. I'm a drinker and I'm a smoker. I use drugs and alcohol because I was not an isolating guy. I'm the party guy. I'm the clubbing guy. I'm all that. And if this thing wasn't fun, you'd have a different speaker up in here. I'm not the speaker that's going to scare you in the recovery. If you go back out there, still kicking it. People used to look at the way I was getting down and be like, damn, Ralph, ain't you scared of overdose? I'd be like, see, you're an overdose. I'm scared of the deadly underdose. You better put some up on here. So I'm not the one that the message of fear hold. You know, I'm the one that's got to have a message of depth and weight. You know, I'm the one that, you know, it's got, if it wasn't fun, you know, I was on a panel with Tom I many years ago, a few years. And Tom had 55 years at the time. He said, what's the most important thing you found in your recovery, Tom? And he said, one word. In your 55 years, what's the most important thing? He said, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. Damn it, if it's supposed to be a program of attraction, make it attractive. And it was attractive to me. My brother Ron and my boy Strength, we were rolling. Because new friends want you to put four kits in your spiritual tool. First thing I want you to do is get a sobriety day. If you ain't got one, you don't have one. Get a sobriety day. Next, get a home group. This looks like a good home group. Get a home group. Home group is somewhere you go where everybody know your name, something like a Cheers bar, you know. Third thing is get a sponsor. Sponsor is valuable, vital. He knows the lay of the land. He can take you where you ain't been. He's done it all already. He'll jump in the hole with you. He won't just show you out, jump in with you and show you the way out. Get a sponsor and then get a road dog. Road dog is different than a sponsor. You may not be running with your sponsor. You may not be hanging out with your sponsor. Your sponsor may be in a whole different generation than you, but your road dog, and you know, you try to come correct to your sponsor. No, sir. I'm not looking at girls in the meeting. And with your dog, you'd be like, man, did you see them honeys at that meeting? I'm going back to that meeting. And that's who you talk about your sponsor to, right? You got to have somebody talk about your sponsor. And so with your dog, and it's been fun, and that's the deal that makes it the journey worthwhile. Now, if you're solo, it works better with somebody. You know, it works better because I may not be crazy the same day you crazy. And it's just something about when we were in the workshop together And when I knew Rodney had that appointment for a fifth step, goddammit, I'm not going to let him get ahead of me. I'm going to do an appointment for a fifth step. And when we used to show up on Sundays, I remember when we first started doing amends and people would be coming in and we'd have a healthy competition, that kind that goddamn, he's not going to be doing amends and I'm not doing it. And we knew because of where we come from. The thing about us, what disciplines us, what would stop you from lying about that? The price. That's why we don't have police in AA. We got a greater price that we have to pay. That's what Bill used to say. We got a greater price. And we all knew we weren't lying. And so this year, all three of us have turned 34 years old. Still here. So that reason I talk about it is because from my experience. My experience, having somebody on the road with me, invaluable.
Thank you. We got several different questions just around sponsorship. And if you could, I don't know, whatever you'd care to say about sponsors in the early days or what it's like now or just any of your experience, maybe you've had to change sponsors through the years. Or
I have had to change sponsors. I had a sponsor, Bob Hunt was my first sponsor. He was from Los Angeles. He was the guy, the way I got my first sponsor, he was a guy that was kind to me. He's an older guy. He was the kind of guy Bill talks about when he saw Ebby, his deportment shouted he was a man with an answer. And my sponsor was like that. In addition, his voice, he was a guy when he shared in meetings, everybody stopped to listen. Everybody stopped to listen. And he was a man who commanded respect. And he was a man who befriended me too. I was 18 months without a job and I was going to this club all the time. And he would put me in the car, him and his partner, Latif, and I just listened to him. And they talked nut house stories and crazy stories. He's not the first guy that took me through the big book, but he was my first big book. And so I would go, and the way I got him as a sponsor, I was going around and I was about 6 months sober. And I had been ride with him and Latif, and he put me in the car just like, but I knew, because I come from, you know, when you come from streets, and I'm not a street guy, but, you know, at the end, everybody I was around, it's never something for nothing. Our society takes some getting used to, this altruistic movement of ours. And so I was so afraid and of rejection, still a big thing in my character, so scared of rejection, you know, and I'm sitting in a meeting and I'm scared and to ask him to sponsor me. He don't want to take on my case. He knows everybody. Man, what if he tells me no? So we rolled him one day in his car and I said, Bob, you know I consider you my sponsor, right? So I'm not asking and I'm throwing it out there. You know I can, and he kind of just did what old timer, and he was about 10 at the time. So I felt like an old timer to me. And he's like, it's all right. And I had him for about 15 years. Not the truth, though. Asterisk. He moved. And he moved when I was about 10 or 11 years sober to Northern California. We stayed in touch, and then we went, and we fell out of touch. And there was a period, and I met people. I had started going out and talking and meeting people in the street and some guys that I consider mentors. Even a lady I considered a mentor, and I'd run stuff by. I've never been crazy enough not to test my thinking by somebody else. Always. And some of my close-mouth friends. But I was walking around one day in my 15th year. I had not talked to Bob Hunt in 2.5 years. And out of loyalty to him, would not call somebody. And I walked, and it was like a thunderbolt. I was walking and said, damn, you walking around unsponsored. And I had been meeting, I met a couple of guys that really caught my attention. And I was out and I would see them, and it was between two guys. And this one guy, Bob B, out of St. Paul, Minnesota. When I first heard him speak, he called me. He's a very successful guy. Bob right now is 52 years sober. At the time, he was probably in his 30s. And at the time, he didn't share from a holier than now place. And he shared his failures and he shared these falls down and the rest. And he caught my attention and we spent time, and he's been my sponsor now since I was about 16 or 17 years sober. So Bob B out of St. Paul, Minnesota. Sponsorship is, if you are not sponsoring, and I'm not saying this is a put down, but if you've been sober for a minute, any length of time, when should I start sponsoring? When somebody asks you. That's like a woman in here saying, when should I start having babies? Probably when you get pregnant. Now you can plan it, but if you get pregnant, you better get ready. I'm not ready. Your ass is pregnant, you know. And I ask sponsee, say, sponsor, I ain't ready to sponsor. Somebody asked you. Well, I'm not ready. When you tell the sponsee or the prospect no, they don't hear humility. They don't hear, oh, I'm scared. They don't hear, oh, I don't feel qualified to take you on. They hear no. No. Damn it, you came out of foxhole. Stay one step ahead of the posse. That's now. I'm not an authority on Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. So the things we're talking about now is Ralph White's experiences, and some of it is admittedly opinions. There are some people think if you have not completed all 12 steps, then you shouldn't be sponsoring. Then I don't have a quarrel with that. I don't have a quarrel with what anybody thinks, but you got me right now. And me right now, when I started sponsoring, I had 11 months of sobriety, and I hadn't gone through all 12 steps. And I have sponsees right now. One of my greatest joys, because I travel a lot and I'm gone a lot. So a lot of people come to me and ask me about sponsoring. And one of my great joys is putting sponsees with sponsees. You know, and I see them, and they take ownership, and they take possession. And this is my sponsee. And I see them take cakes, and they talk about, I want to thank Taylor, or I want to thank Dave, or I want to, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, to see that sprout up about you. So Ralph, what are your feelings about? I think that you get ready. I think God prepares you the same way he prepares you for parenthood. It's on the job training. It's OJT. There's no manual and there's no book. I won't know what to say. It's a lot of people on here that sponsor right now. If you put God in the mix, don't worry about it. Don't worry about that. The thing that I bring the sponsorship more, and I sponsor men and I sponsor women. If people say, do you, and I don't recommend that. I don't talk for or against it. There are lots of people that don't have any business doing that at all. And I'm not saying it like I'm better than that. That's what's happened for me. I don't, and when people say men with men and women, I don't take issue with that. I'm just sharing with you my experience, you know, and I sponsor men and women. My sponsor only sponsors men, you know, so I don't have issues. I think inside of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, there are lots of what, find your niche and sponsor inside your personality. Some people say I'm a sponsor just like my sponsor, you know, well, you got a sponsor inside your personality, you know, that's the other thing. I sponsor inside my personality. The thing I think, if you talk to my sponsees and they say, Ralph, what's the greatest trait you bring to the table? And I think for me, the greatest trait I bring to the table, I'm non-judgmental. You can say anything to me. You can't, I don't fire. I don't have fireable offenses. You know, nothing ensures immunity from drinking as much as work with others. So you're my immune system. You're my immune system. And the beauty of working with others, that question that somebody asked about how did you make it through that divorce and how did you make it through the low spots, I believe sponsorship. Not necessarily on the upward end, though that was important. But I think on downstream, I think my sponsees, when I felt worthless, when I felt hopeless, when I felt like giving up, I never felt useless. I always felt useful. I always laughed during the day. I always found the God in the situation. I always was able to get out of myself. I think you deny yourself one of the great experiences in life and inside our fellowship when you don't get involved in sponsorship, when you don't get involved with seeing the lights come on. When you don't, and I'm one of them. I'm not a clinical. Oh, I just take you through this stuff. No, I'm there when the babies are born. I'm there in the marriages. I'm there at the weddings. I'm not in the marriage. I don't have marriage advice. I'm out of that. But I'm there, standing there when you walk down the aisle. I'm not there to tell you stay or go. That ain't my job. I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not any of that. But I'm a closed mouth friend. And I'm a guy that's armed with facts about myself. And I'm a guy that's armed with a whole bunch of experience. And I'm a guy that'll walk with God. I ain't trying to give you mine, but I'm going to try to walk with you till you get your relationship with yours.
Do you, on that line, I think you already kind of explained it, but do you find a one size fits all with sponsees, or do you just kind of meet people where they are?
No. And I'm not trying to make sponsees like kids, but in some ways I use the same analogies. When you first start sponsoring, you get spaghetti with your sponsees. You can't kill them. I got a friend that say, you got to kill one or two before you get it right. Bill Clinton said, but you know, and it just takes the pressure out, you know, you can't kill. It's like when you're a new parent, you get so scared. And then I look at my 36-year-old and I look at my 25-year-old daughter, and they're daddy's girls. And one is a lawyer and one's in entertainment. They both graduated from college and I'm in awe. I'm in awe that the greatest responsibility, people say sponsor, but the greatest responsibility on this planet is you bring a life into this world that you're totally responsible for outside of God, you as the person. And they grow up and they grow. This isn't like a pet or something. You could kill a goldfish or something. These are people. And you're not equipped, but you do it. Sponsorship the same way. I'm scared. I can't do this. Where's the manual? You know, what am I going to mess it up? Man, wow. And you walk through that, but you do it because you put your hand in God's hands and remarkable things happen. You know, it's bigger than me and it's bigger than you. And that's the thing to put in the, and I'm talking enough. What was the question again?
Just if you had a one size fits all for sponsee.
I'm like, I'm going off to the sideways. Absolutely. That's what took me there. I don't have a one size. Do you have a one size fits all for your kids? If you do, you may, but it ain't going, but it is not the right way. Rain is a practicing attorney, and Rain is 12 years older than River. And Rain and River are a lot alike. And when Rain was going off to school and when Rain was making her career choices, and Rain's an actor, Rain's creative, Rain's way over here, Rain is, but both of them are super focused. Would I have been a good dad if I had told Rain, no, you need to take River's path? No. River was law. River did this. I mean, Rain did this. River, to be a good dad, you know, support Rain and all the things she was doing. I'm at UCLA. River, I'm sitting in rehearsals till 12 midnight. We're going across town when she's in these little, you know, theater repertory things. I'm taking a bunch of girls home after theater practice. I'm doing, no, you know, and even when it comes to disciplining, you know, they have a lot of things in common, but they have some things that with Rank, particularly because the ages are different. In sponsorship, you might get them different. But for me, I don't have you fit into what it is I do. And I know a lot of people have that. I do what the book says in chapter 7. Find out about your prospect. I do the same thing when I work in sponsorship. Find out about them. Find out all you can about them. See how you would want to be approached if you were in their shoes. And that is super important. I got people all over the map. You know, I have gay guys. I have gay women. I have, and the first gay person I was sponsoring, Pat came to me and she was coming. And I said, well, Pat, what about your lifestyle? We don't have to. She said, Spons, I know how to be gay. I need to learn how not to drink. I need to know how not to drink. You know, so, but that was a wonderful question. And I don't adjust myself. There are some things that have to do with recovery. That's recovery. Fourth step is a fourth step. Now, the way you might approach it, you might go all the way across. But in terms of people and approaches that are different, you know, because some people, I'm talking straight out, you know, no. And I had the ability to go there. I had the ability to kick you in the ass or pat you on the back. Whatever situation called for. I'm the kind of guy, don't sugarcoat it with me. And my sponsor is not a pull and punches guy with me. But he says something. And I use it too. He says, Ralph, I know who's in the game. So I'm not pushing the guy to say, and I'm the same way. A lot of people say I fire them. I don't, if they don't want to do what I say. I know who's in the game. But my job is to make it so attractive, appealing, and available that the ones that ain't in see the benefits and want to get in and feel like it's available. Some people make this process feel like it's hard work. Yeah, I know you say you should do, but damn, I ain't up to all that. This is the fun way to go.
Yeah. Well, you have been so generous with your time. We're just about at the end. There is one more question. If we could tap you on just whatever you'd like to share about your 11th step practice, how it came to you or how it is today, whatever comments on the 11th step you might like to offer.
A lot of people mistakenly say they're doing a 10th step I'm getting into what people say and do. Let me erase that. A lot of the time, I used to think and confuse 10 steps with 11 steps. The nightly review is an 11th step. The 10th step is catching it when it's going on. So when somebody says sponsor, I just cut somebody out. What do I do? I need to talk about this right now. I got some people that's really good. That's 10th step. When somebody calls in the middle of the night or texts me in the middle, that's 11th step. Nightly review. So the other stuff is in three parts. The nightly review, ask myself some hard questions. I'm not consistent like I probably need to be. I'm a guy. Find your niche and doing everything too, because I'm working. I work at a law firm as a paralegal. I'm a real estate agent. I got a paralegal business and I got a bunch of sponsees and I'm a granddaddy and I got kids. So I'm a busy ass guy. I go to bed late and I get up early, so I sometimes hit the ground running. But nightly review, there's some interesting questions in the nightly review, you know, and the nightly review, when you look at the questions, really, it's another, sounds like 10, you know, I'm watching for those same four things, you know, watching 10 for resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, fear. Sounds like fourth step. Yes. You know, again, so that's this manner of living I'm doing. It's a whole lot of doing that. And that 11 step question and all that, were you kind and, you know, were you kind toward all? Yes. Were you thinking of yourself most of the time? And so I go through those questions when I do it laying in the bed. Some people do it very too. Then when most people think about the 11 step, they're thinking about, you know, the morning meditation and the getting up in the morning, in the prayer and meditation. And I had a lot more problems with meditation. And for me, I used to do guided, and my sponsor, who's retired, can put more time in that. So he has a lot of books he reads every morning. I read six, and I don't read six books. I have three books, two 24-hour a day. So they have dates on them. I read them. I have a daily refraction, date on it, read it. I have an Emmett Fox, date on it, read it. And I have two books by my boy. I'm going to think of his name in a minute. I'm looking back at it. And so I look at those and so I go through the DeMello. And so I look at those books and I do little snippets from this reading, which is of six books. Sound like it takes a lot of time. My reading actually takes about seven minutes. And as a result of the reading, now my meditation has gone from really sporadic. I usually rouse myself now. And I usually do about 20 to 30 minute meditation as a result of the reading. And I don't know why that is, that unlocked meditation for me. I don't know. Maybe I needed my soil tilled or something, but that is, and then throughout the day, I'm big on pausing when agitated. When people say, what's your 11 step practice? They usually are just talking about morning. No, the nightly review, then get up in the morning. And it starts the day before, because I go in clean slate the next day. Get up in the morning. Do that. Okay, God, what's my assignment? Show me what you need me to do and give me the power to do it. Show me, give me. Show me what you need me to do, give me the power to do it. This business of prayer, we could have done a whole nother talk about that. I have another idea about prayer, and it's Bill says we need not be vague about it. And I have some thoughts on that. Prayer may not change things for you, but it'll change you for things. The purpose of prayer is not to sway and influence. Prayer is character building and character molding. There's something about being a consistent prayer that doesn't change my circumstance, but it changes me to meet my circumstance. It's giving voice to something. And that last piece in the 11th step, that throughout the day, okay, God, you in charge, your will be done. Pause when agitated, fellas. If you get into it with your girl, don't only pause, add something else that ain't in the book. Pause and walk. Because they probably will be talking in the pause. You might have to walk. Okay.
That was fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm going to unmute everybody.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to allow people to unmute themselves, but I'm going to mute you now. Let's form a virtual circle and say the Lord's Prayer. You may unmute yourself if you like. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.